well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. The Second Amendment.
Today, Lee and I are joined by a couple of fellows that we've done a little bit of firearms training with. A couple
of friends.
Joe and Mike. How's it going, guys?
Good, how are you?
Not bad.
Excellent.
Not bad. I'm really glad glad you guys agreed
this
to.
This promises to be a good one. I've been looking forward to it.
I know you guys have both listened to some of the episodes, so it's not a big surprise. So I'll just ask each of you, and I'll start with Joe. The Second Amendment to the U.S. Constitution, as an individual, what does that mean to you, Joe?
Basically, I would say protection, right? And that's self-defense as well as many other applications. Any type of threat, I feel, we might have a civil duty, hopefully not in our lifetime, but, better to be prepared. So basic protection is what I would say.
Gotcha. Well, what about you, Mike?
Very similar, and thought just, to be able to protect those you love, your family, your friends, and your country. And I believe now more than ever, we're starting to see that it wasn't just intended for, hunting or anything that they say. Our forefathers were the most brilliant group of men to ever sit down and discuss anything in one, one place at one time, and they knew what they were doing.
It's pretty fascinating, actually,
to
think about the foresight that they had with establishing rules of a government.
Well, they lived it. They saw tyranny. And, what better teacher than experience?
True.
And to protect our country from an overreaching government, to protect from somebody that wants to break into your house. It's, if the government can have it, we should have it.
So are you an absolutist?
Yeah, 100%.
Okay. What about you, Joe?
The more and more I think about that question, I'm geared toward an absolutist for sure, right? If we have a government that has technology, I think that we should be able to have the same amount of technology. If you have the means to have a fighter jet and you can operate it responsibly, by all means, why not? I mean, if you have good intentions, there should be no worry about, I don't know what word I'm looking for.
For people to use it for, nefarious purposes.
Yeah, yeah. Like harm, right? Like if you're a good, responsible person, like just a general good human being, mm-hmm. And that's a hard judge of character. Bad people give good people the short end of the stick, right? We get the
all the time.
We get the restrictions, right? It's we lose all of our freedoms because somebody manipulates something or uses something the wrong way in the intent of harming somebody. So
do you think there should be restrictions on certain people?
Yeah, most definitely. If you're known to be a violent person, and I'd call it an aggressor, right? That's just going out there to cause complete harm to other people with no disregard for human life, most definitely. Now, in a self-defense aspect, that's a completely different scenario. So I would say that, people that have serious mental disorders and that are taking, extreme forms of medication and are mentally unstable, obviously we have an issue there, right? There is an issue, and until that issue is addressed, then there should be a restriction. Now, how do we go about that? I'm not really,
That's that slippery slope.
Right. And then who deems you, who deems you mentally fit? What tests are they using, or who is the person that's going to give the thumbs up or the thumbs down? So that, again, it could be a slippery slope, but,
that's where the issue, always falls, is who becomes the arbitrator. Who is the one that has bestowed that power to make that decision? And historically speaking, if we want to talk about, who should be allowed to have guns and not, governments historically are responsible for more death and destruction than anybody ever. Like they have,
I think,
massacred entire country.
I think you're onto something there a little bit, Mike.
Mao.
In that, I think that the people that created our country probably were, if they were to look at where the limitation should be, that it would have been focused toward government.
I would have to agree.
And I'm just so shocked that, you know, that more and more people, and it's not something that I you know, relish or want for our country, but it's so shocking to go back to the 80s or early 90s and think that we have conversations now about, you know, the Second Amendment and defending the Constitution, that, you know, I hear that more and more and more from people that I love, people that I respect, that, you know, they're concerned about the Second Amendment from the perspective of defending the Constitution from government overreach.
Mm-hmm.
And it's super, super concerning to me. And it's part of the reason, like, I think that we do this podcast, right? Like,
100%.
We're here to have, like, conversations. And I think people have been, I don't know, are we walled off? Are we, I'm not sure what the word is, but I feel like there's a necessity for us to have conversations like this and to get our ideas and our thoughts out.
Well,
go ahead, Joe, please.
Absolutely, I agree with you, and I just want to expand on that a little bit, is especially for anyone that's listening, we're really trying to get some people on with an opposing view to actually discuss what gun regulations some people think are appropriate.
We're just average people trying to...
Correct, just educate.
This is a snapshot in time. I don't sit here as as an expert. I have, you know, some experience in that, you know, security and protection field, but, you know, I don't, and in firearms, but I'm certainly not the last word on any of that as well. But, in these areas, like, these are just conversations and just snapshots of our thinking on, you know, July 31st, 2024.
Yeah.
And, we might walk out of here with a different viewpoint tonight. Maybe somebody who's listening will have a different viewpoint tonight. We may come back a week or two from now and have a different view on what we talked about today. So I just, you know, hope that all the listeners, that anyone would listen to this podcast, this is just, you know, this is just people talking and expressing some ideas.
Well,
and it doesn't always mean that they're, you know, 100% firm or...
Right, right.
But
that's also why we want to encourage people... anybody that's listening, they can always go on the website, make comments, reach out, shoot an email. Love to talk to some of the listeners, because as much as I enjoy talking to Joe and Mike and yourself, Lee, I think a lot of times more is actually learned and gained by having a civil conversation with people that disagree. I consider myself, obviously, a firearms enthusiast, an advocate for the Second Amendment, but I'll keep my mind open and I'll keep my ears open. If somebody wants to point something out that I have not considered, an angle or a point of view or a certain perspective, the day I stop learning, it is the day I failed. So I will just continue to have the conversations, but I do want to encourage people to reach out to us, to have those conversations, so it's not an echo chamber.
Those conversations are absolutely necessary, too.
I agree.
Because when we talk about our founding fathers being brilliant, it's not an accident that the First Amendment is the First Amendment and the Second Amendment is the Second Amendment. Finding yourself being able to engage in civil discourse and have a conversation about whether it be firearms or the hot topic of the day is what our founding fathers intended for us to be able to work through our differences. Yeah. And because at the end of the day, dialogue is so important, being able to understand one another. And I think one of the big issues that we find in society today is that dialogue is shut down.
Yeah.
Depending on how you think, depending on what you want to say. And a lot of people that oppose the Second Amendment are so misinformed about firearms in general, about whatever the token catchphrase would be, you know, mass shooting or
weapons of war.
Weapons of war. I mean, rocks are weapons of war. Anything, you know, here, this is a glass. If I hit you in the face with it, it's an assault glass.
Correct.
I mean, it's all the individual makes that decision. And when we look at society, I believe deep down inside that society is filled inherently good people. At the end of the day, if you find yourself at the business end of a firearm, you're going to try to stop that by calling a good guy with a gun.
Right.
Just because the state says that that cop, we deem him fit to respond to your time of need, doesn't mean that he's the only one. This country was built on good people doing the right thing. And I think we need to start doing that again. Men just need to be men and do the right thing again. And that is ultimately where change begins. It's like, it's here. And back to where you were saying having opposing viewpoints, I think that if people that oppose the Second Amendment were actually educated and came and they had a conversation and maybe did a day at the range and saw, like, people that truly know firearms, how safety is always of utmost importance.
Right.
And how, what's the words that I'm looking for?
How responsible. How
responsible and efficient one can be, it might change their mind.
Yep. I agree with you. I'm not sure. I've mentioned it a few times on the website, 2atoday.us. I write a blog, and my first blog was titled Capitalizing on Ignorance. And that is one of the main points was, I stated it pretty early, is that people that are not familiar with guns, firearms, the gun world, the Second Amendment, I have found a majority of those people have gained their knowledge, or what they think is their knowledge, is from television shows, movies, or from the media. And I say it all the time.
Terrible journalism as far as the media is concerned, because you see a lot of things out
absolutely.
There that are, you know, for us having experienced, you know, training with firearms, that some of the information out there is completely incorrect.
Yes.
And they're literally lying to your face.
You guys, that's the mainstream media. There's no way they'd lie to us.
Yeah. but it's
what?
You know,
you're right, Joe. You're 100%
accurate. I would agree with you on that. And you know, you probably know that there was a point in time where, you know, certain people had said some things about me owning firearms, you know, having young children, and it's it's completely, you know, they like create this false envisionment of how I handle and store firearms in my home, and that's what they portray, right? Like, you're a terrible person. You just have guns laying about, and, you know, and that was completely not the case, obviously, but, you know.
Do you want to know, in my personal opinion?
People just, you know, I don't know. They see stuff in a movie, right? Like, they walk in, you know, there's a show on TV, there's a bunch of guns laying around, so they think, oh, every gun owner's just got guns strewn about their house, you know what I mean?
I'll never forget the scene, because I love the movie, in fact, True Lies.
Yes.
And toward the end, Jamie Lee Curtis is holding, I believe, an Uzi, and she went to go fire it, and the recoil, it was just too much for her to handle. She dropped the Uzi, and as it's bouncing down the stairs, it continues to fire every time it hit a stair tread. And it, luckily, it was hitting all the bad guys. It was somewhat comical, but people see that and it gets ingrained in their head. You don't drop that. I mean, that thing could fire.
Yeah.
Yeah. The most dangerous child around a firearm is a curious child. One that has been told and explained, this is a gun, this is what it does, this is how you don't touch a gun without an adult.
No. Right.
Curiosity, ultimately, is, I mean, in healthcare, I used to see gunshots all the time, stuff like that, and it was, I'll tell you what, there weren't kids from gun owners always coming in. It's gangs. It's, you know.
Oh, sure. You can break, it's not very difficult to start to really break down where guns are being used improperly.
For sure.
Yeah,
that's another, like we talked about, misinformation, or, you know, the media.
Well, to serve an agenda.
Yes.
If you can take information and spin it to further your cause, then people have a tendency to do that. And when you're a politician, that's almost exclusively what you do. And anytime you can mention safety and kids, then it's almost taboo to disagree with the person that's saying it. So one of the statistics that I've seen flying around or I've heard used recently is firearms are now the leading cause of death among children in the country. And obviously I'm the first to say I don't want any innocent people to die ever. That's one reason I carry a firearm, because I don't want myself as an innocent person or my family. But what they don't tell you is that they change the factors. With a firearm, it's 1 through 19.
Yeah.
The age is 1 through 19. But for car accidents, it's 1 through 16. If you take 1 through 19, it's still car accidents. But even more interesting is if you... I'm going to say it, and I think I'm going to be off by a year or so. But if you go from, you know, newborn to 11 with firearms, it's virtually zero.
Yes.
It's a very, very low. And then you go 11 to 16 or 11 to 15, and it starts to creep up. But where's the most of it?
Yeah.
16 to 19, 16 to 20.
I think there's some things that we have to consider from the other side that have to be sort of addressed or at least acknowledged by us. And you know, I welcome anyone's opinion here about them. But, you know, one is I think there's a logic that people who are reluctant to embrace the Second Amendment, I think that they, you know, they see a connection between, well, if there were less guns, that automatically equals less death and less pain, right?
So crime, just, I mean, all sorts of things.
And it's right? a difficult challenge for us being pro Second Amendment to overcome just the idea that they would say, you know, like, hey, if there's less of anything, right, there would be less accidents, less chances for people to harm someone else just by force of numbers. So I think that's one. Just less guns would be less problems, right? I think the other thing that people have a hard time getting around, especially when we start talking about, like, you know, the black rifles, right, the AR-15s, that, you know, it's true that there are all kinds of things that you could use in war. You know, you could use a sling and a rock.
Mm-hmm.
But there are weapons that are more advantageous to go to war with, and there are weapons that are less advantageous
sure.
to go to war with.
Agreed.
It would be less advantageous for me to go with my slingshot, and it would be more advantageous for me to go with my AR-15.
So if you're going up against a tyrannical government, what do you want?
Well, yeah, for sure, yeah. But I think those are the things that people that look at it on the other side of the equation look at those things that way, and I think there's our big things
for
us to try to overcome.
There's numbers involved in that argument, though. The less, you know, less guns, less crime. First, you have to start by saying, listen, there's how many millions or hundreds of millions of guns, maybe even billions of guns in the United States? Guns are going nowhere. Like, even if they make them illegal, and it's common sense, criminals do not follow the rules. But just recently,
hence them being criminals.
Yeah. I think it was Maine. Maine went from issued carry to constitutional carry, and they went from, halfway down the violent crime, on the list of states, mm-hmm. to now they're one of the safest states in the nation, all within a matter of 4 years, 5 years from constitutional carry.
And let's face it, you can take a lot of those numbers and skew them and start to categorize them to use them either to your advantage. The other side could use them to their advantage. And I'm going to look up, because John Lott Jr. does a lot of research with crime figures, and I think something that doesn't get enough criticism or question about is that if you look at the population of the United States in 2020 compared to 1980, just the pure amount of people there are, then what has the crime rate, the number of crimes done within that time. If the actual number of crimes has stayed about the same while the population is increasing, per capita, it's actually being reduced.
Yes.
And during that time, 1990 to 2024, I don't know what the numbers are, but I do know over the past several years, gun ownership has skyrocketed. And I would like to see per capita the violent crime rate within that time period, because it's not always just what, you know, how many crimes or but it's per capita. That's the best way to look at it. So what politicians will constantly say, you know, the United States is the only country that has this problem with these mass shootings. And first of all, that's not true. It's just not. There's charts. I can post them. It's not true. We're somewhere right around 19th, if you base it on per capita.
Yes.
The other problem you run into with that particular statistic or that particular factor is that a lot of crimes, a lot of countries don't gather their information the same way we do. There's been a lot of talk in the recent years about the drastic increase of mass shootings. Well, that's because a few years ago, the FBI changed the definition of what a mass shooting is. So the news reporters will now say, you know, this is April 20th, and we've already had 200 and some mass shootings.
Same with school shooting. I mean, if it happens within, I forget how...
There's this particular distance.
Yeah, 100 yards or whatever it is. Yeah. It's...
So I was just looking up just because I wanted to see what it was. Four or more murders, right, is what they're considering a mass shooting.
I think it's four or more
injuries.
Injuries. So I just happened to look it up because I'm just like, I wonder what that number is right now. And I don't know, again, I don't know how accurate that is. That was just what I first pulled up. So maybe if it's four or more injuries.
Injuries right? due to a shooting that is now considered.
And that has to be an inflicted wound, right?
So, no.
So could it be somebody who's running
away?
Tripped
over a slide.
Tripped over a curb, you skin your knee, and you just...
You have a sprained ankle or something like that. You have now sustained an injury due to that shooting.
Right, okay.
And if you were the fourth injury from that...
Now you're a statistic.
Now you turned that into a mass shooting.
Yeah. So thanks, Joe. Curious on your guys' thoughts on this part of the argument against the Second Amendment. Freedom is scary, fuck off.
I'm sorry.
Run that by me again.
We're talking about, like, you know, the...
Freedom is scary.
Freedom is scary.
I gotcha.
And you know what? This is my right. Freedom is scary. There's no conversation to be had.
Yeah.
I don't disagree with that notion, other than that typically doesn't win over the people that are giving it consideration. That argument to me is for the extreme left, that no matter what you tell them, they're already brainwashed, where they're not only are they never going to own a firearm, they don't want you to own one, they don't want you to own one, they don't want me to own one. But I think there's a lot of people that
I think that the extreme left wants to have all the firearms.
They're not anti-gun, but they are anti-American citizens having guns because they are okay with the government having all the firepower that they need in order to put us in check.
Yeah, I'm sorry, Joe. Could you finish your thought, though?
No, and I see what you're saying. Them as a politician, as an individual, they probably don't want one, but the government they're representing, they want the government to have those firearms. And those are the people that, you know, Mike... so eloquently stated.
I mean, it really is that simple.
It really is. It is that simple.
I see what you're saying.
State it for everyone. Let's could we just say it one more time in a different way?
So what I was trying to say is that when you talk about discussions of the Second Amendment and, you know, trying to woo the other side or trying to educate them, at the end of the day, do they need it? Like, I don't care if you like the Second Amendment, hate the Second Amendment. It is my God-given right to own firearms. And you know what? If you don't like it, you know, pound sand. Like, we don't need to have this discussion. It's right here in black and white. Mm-hmm. And
I agree with you. But there's plenty of people I know that will carry a firearm, and I'll talk to them, and maybe I'll go, "Oh, I didn't know you have, I didn't know you got your concealed carry license." I didn't. The Constitution's my permit. Okay.
Good for them.
Good for them. I don't disagree. I also don't want to be the one in court spending the money proving that that's the case. So unfortunately, sometimes I'll bend and comply. So I went and got a concealed carry license.
I see.
And even though I don't think I should.
No, agreed. So this, I mean, we could, again, you could try to reel me back in or whatnot, but this brings us down the path of, like, when the courts are corrupted, when the lawmakers are corrupted, when we've got the Homeland Security or the DOJ, unelected officials making gun laws.
Right.
And when do you say, like, I mean, hey, you no longer represent us, and you were never charged with that task in the first place. So do you recognize it? This system only works if we continue to play along.
You're not wrong. You're not wrong.
And I do understand and respect that people do. They have families, and they have, you know, mouths to feed. They've got things that prevent them from maybe going as extreme as I go, but at the same time,
that's not their hill to die on.
Yeah, we're seduced into this lifestyle. Like, we are seduced into always
groomed.
Yes,
we're groomed.
We are, in whether it's through, I mean, marketing, TV shows, you know, Hollywood culture, whatever it may be, we get ourselves into debt, and then we become wage slaves. And if we were able to recognize that a little sooner in life, and before we had responsibilities and before we had mouths to feed and all that, and people did work, you know, it was just them, we could stop this. We could stop this all overnight.
That's one of the most interesting comments. One of the most interesting things that I think anyone has said
brought up on the podcast.
Yeah. So maybe this would be a good time to sort of ask Mike, how'd you come to that point? Like, where did
that's
you
a develop, great question.
Yeah, where did you develop your philosophy on how'd you get to be the person that you are today? Could you just take us through that?
Oh, boy.
And you can go into as much or as little detail as you're comfortable doing.
No, it's quite all right.
But so, I'd like to know when you started to have these kinds of thoughts, like what, like.
All right, without going down any, like, rabbit holes or any of that, you can agree, you can disagree, it's fine. Just I'm going to just kind of go with it.
I think I'm very appreciative of...
It started with...
I'm here to listen to you and to learn and to challenge if necessary. Like, I think it's very interesting. So if you're willing to share it, that's freaking awesome.
Absolutely. So I was not what you would call a good student.
Okay.
I mean... I always had an issue with school ever since, you know, high school. I'm like, man, when am I going to need to know trigonometry in life? Like, why aren't we learning about taxes? Why aren't we learning about starting a business? Like, I would ask these things, and I would get in trouble. But fast forward, 9/11 opened my eyes. I'm sorry, a fire hot enough to melt structural steel is not hot enough to burn two people's passports that were in the plane, and they found them amongst the rubble within 12 hours. I was like, that doesn't make sense. So I started questioning everything. And the more and more I looked into it, the more and more I realized our government hates us. They absolutely hate us. And without going into all the nuances of why, I could break it down into just like the fiscal portion of it. You can take, as of today, take the... all the billionaires
hate or disregards you.
Oh, they no.
Take your pick. You really think that?
I think that a lot they view us as indentured servants.
Okay.
We are a means to their lifestyle.
Okay.
Or
so cool. 9/11 happens. You look at it and you see things that bother you.
Yes, that's what opened my eyes to things aren't what they appear to be. and it has evolved from then. But one of the big things was, you know, we talk about the IRS. Rumsfeld, the day before 9/11, announced that, listen, man, we're missing over $2 trillion that we can't account for. And guess where all that information was stored? One of those buildings that collapsed. So that really got me going down that rabbit hole. But the more and more I looked into the government, the more and more I saw that even if you take away all the conspiracy stuff, the gross mismanagement and lack of accountability from top to bottom within our government, they don't deserve our money. You could take the 400 richest people in the United States today, and I think that their combined wealth is like, I want to say like $4 trillion. That would fund our government for 6 months. Like, come on. We don't have the issues that face our government right now. It's a spending issue.
100%.
And that is because our government, like I said, they disregard us. Their true, their real job is for the lobbyists and the institutions that they are bought and they're bought out by. And I saw this in healthcare. I worked for 20 years as a nurse and a paramedic. And after everything with COVID, I left. I walked away from it all. You know, I've got $100,000 in an education that I just said, you know what, I can't do it anymore. Because it's all lies. Everything. Mm-hmm. They want us fat. They want us sick. They want us dumb. Because they want us reliant on these institutions, whether it's the banks, whether it's, you know, the government through SNAP benefits, or, I mean, what are they pushing now? The you'll own nothing and be happy. In 15-minute cities. They just want.
Do you know where that came from? Because I've heard it as well. The you'll own nothing and be happy.
World Economic
Forum. Okay. Yeah. That's what I thought. All right.
But and again, I went a little bit off topic.
No, it's okay.
I don't believe that our government has our best intentions at heart. If we really wanted to fix these problems, I really think that we need to take focus away from the federal government and start locally. School boards.
I hear this more and more too. Yeah. In addition to the part about people being very concerned about having to sort of take up arms,
mm-hmm.
I also hear some people saying things like,
like voting locally.
The local politics. Yeah, like getting into the local politics. Thanks, Joe.
And that's part of why I think that, like, you know, I would hate to see this nation that has been given to us. I mean, let's be real. The generation, our grandfather's generation, were a group of the baddest men to ever walk this planet, ever. The things that they did and the shit they saw.
Sacrifices.
Exactly. They right. it, well in
willing,
they,
willing.
Yeah, willing, willing,
willing to
yeah.
to go make yeah. that sacrifice.
Exactly for the greater good and mm-hmm. for what they believed was virtuous and righteous. And I mean, they were right with God. They were right with their, you know, their family. They were for home and country, like everything. And they were willing to put it all on the line to go and do that for the greater good
and be proud of it.
Exactly. And you know, the horrors they experienced, they knew. And they came home and they ate it. And, you know, they did what had to be done. And then within two generations, man, we're just a bunch of yutzes. it's so sad.
You know, I don't want to interrupt you, but you
no,
know,
you're
just,
not.
Just that comment that he had made right there, like how he said, like, you know, they made the ultimate sacrifice for God and country. I feel we kind of have that mentality still, right? Or we're trying to get back to that. But mm-hmm. I feel right now in society, if you were to go out and post that on social media, people would look at you, and I think it would be turned in a completely different perspective, right? Like, if you say for God and like, I just feel like there's a, you know, you would be, I don't know what they
you'd
would
be vilified.
Yeah.
Yes. Right.
Do you
it
guys
would be,
have
it? Would be a bad. You know, people would see that like, oh my God, this guy's batshit
crazy.
He's
extreme.
He's an extremist, right? He's a domestic terrorist. Like he wants, you know, none of this. But, you know, really, I mean, it's the same drive that they had, right? Like, I want to do what's right. I want to be a good person. I want to see my fellow man succeed in life, mm-hmm. and I want everyone to be prosperous, right? Like, as much as I see people, like, I'll always give that helping hand to try and boost them up, because what happens is if you get them up that ladder, hopefully they're going to pull you up if they're a good person too. Well, right?
What do they say? Like, a high tide raises all boats.
Yeah,
boats.
Right. Yeah.
It's right. Good for the goose. It's good for the gander, baby.
Absolutely.
So, do any of you guys have a sense of where it started to go wrong? Like,
I do.
All right.
The assassination of JFK.
Wow. Yeah.
I believe that the assassination of JFK was.
Sorry to interrupt, but because LBJ followed him, is that
why? I believe he was the first person that was installed as a president. I mean, if you look some of the policies that came through, I mean, LBJ was quoted saying some colorful things after he passed the. Medicaid reform,
yeah.
And he said, you know, quote unquote, we'll have these N-words voting Democrat for the next 200 years. And that was a four-star general that was sitting next to him that said, no, he said it to me. I forget exactly who it was, but I mean, the policies, everything that was fought for throughout the civil rights movement and all that, they just put them right, in my opinion, put people right back on what has been referred to as the Democratic plantation. Mm-hmm. And you make people dependents, and it all starts with the destruction of the nuclear family.
I 100% agree.
Because everything, all the good we do in this world doesn't mean shit if you walk through those doors and your family's a mess, because that is your ultimate responsibility, is your children, your wife. And we've taken accountability away from, it's always somebody else's fault.
Takes a village.
It does. It really does.
I was being sarcastic because I don't want to count on the village.
No, you shouldn't have to.
Right, like.
But if shit hits the fan, you want to know that your village is there with you.
Right, your community.
Exactly.
We were talking one of the more recent podcasts with Joe Malone about getting back to the community taking care of a problem. If everybody in the community knows the guy at House,
God, I wish he was here right now.
Yeah,
to be in this conversation, that would be.
Yeah, amazing. I don't know if you guys listen to it. It's a little. It's fascinating.
Yeah,
but
the last episode, I was. It was a different take from what I've heard coming from a lot of the other previous guests. It was a completely different.
Like ideology.
Ideology, yeah. And knowing that is because I trained with you, Lee, obviously, and we've all trained together here. The way that he was talking about the way that he wants to train, I was like, man, not that I've never thought about it that way, but he was just blunt in saying it, like, yeah, you just kind of got to grab it by the balls, right? You just got to get out there and you got to fucking get it, right? Like, you got to be aggressive. And, you know, I mean, we're taught in that concealed carry, right? Like, we are supposed to be, you're supposed to shy away, right? Like, you are supposed to try and get yourself out of every bad situation. And from what I got from him, he's like, if a bad situation presents itself, like, you might have to become the aggressor to mitigate that issue, right? You have to become an aggressor.
And I'm going to circle all the way back to something Mike said earlier, because I did pick that up from Joe as well.
Which isn't a bad thing.
And I don't think it's a bad thing either until you're in court.
Yes. Right.
No.
I think it depends on what you consider prevailing is.
And
there's prevailing in the life or death gunfight, and on that I completely agree. Like, you need to prevail.
If you are at a point where you are reaching for your firearm, and you know what, it's a fight that's got to be had, you should probably be willing to take, you know, hey, like, this is life in prison. There isn't a thing I wouldn't do for any guy sitting at this table or my family. Or, you know what? If I got to, that's the price you pay. I mean, I think that being having resolve in your convictions and willing, it goes back to sacrifice. But
I agree with you. And like, you asked when did it change, and we all interrupted Mike on his answer.
No, I went pretty far back there.
And we can come back to it, but I think one of the problems, being 100% blunt, is that we have too many pussies in our society.
Agreed.
We do. We have way too many people that are just, they'll they'll back down. They won't stand up. They won't say anything. They won't.
Men need to be men again.
100%.
Some people won't be honest, right?
I don't to like go social.
Against the grain.
I don't like so. I love going against. Like I yeah. live
yeah.
to
yeah.
like go yeah. against the grain.
I can vouch for that.
And I don't like social media very much. I use it, you know, a little bit as a tool. But one thing I see and it always annoys me. I see it in December, and it's in some of the Second Amendment groups and stuff. And it's like, hey fellas, it's the time of year women are going to be shopping. Alone, they're going to be going to and from their cars. Let's keep an eye out for them. Great. Just because it's December, what the hell are you doing the rest of the year? Are you not paying attention to society around you as a whole, looking out for that 14-year-old girl that could be friends with your daughter as she's walking into the store?
So people don't. I don't know if you've seen any of these videos. They do social experiments where they're on the streets of like New York City or Chicago, and they will have a kid walking down the street, and somebody will come out of an alley and grab a child and go back in the alley, and nobody says anything, does anything.
That's mind-blowing.
Oh, my God. I mean, I
sociologists can't they struggle to sort of explain. I've even seen, I think it was a stabbing, and I hate to use New York City, but I think it was one of the boroughs, and you know, body down on the sidewalk, and there's a CCTV camera, and like countless people walk by.
Yeah,
and like the police don't get called, like no one gets called.
So, and that starts as a man. I think that this is a conversation that really needs to be had. When you said that people are pussies, yes, we are, and I think that comes with, you know, for years now they have been. You've heard the term toxic masculinity.
Yeah.
Toxic masculinity.
I hate it.
You want? There's no such thing as toxic masculinity. There are toxic people.
Sure.
And I mean, that's just they're assholes. That's just the way of the world. But masculine men are what builds society. They are what keeps society safe. They are what protect the children. They are who you call when shit goes bad. You want a warrior in a garden. I don't want gardeners in a war.
Yeah.
There is nothing virtuous about somebody who is not violent, who is not capable of violence. You're just a pussy.
Right.
What is virtuous is a man that is capable of absolute fucking carnage, that shows up and takes his daughter to dance lessons and looks out for all the other moms there. That is virtuous because he's capable, but he's not. What he's doing is he's making sure that he does his part in society. And God help somebody that tries to, you know what I mean,
mm-hmm.
come in and ruin his his daughter's dance recital. But we need to go back to that type of mentality, because a lot of this shit wouldn't be happening if we had dudes stand up. But Joe, you were saying, you know, you're vilified. When you're on social media, you're vilified, and that's part of the power of editing in the mainstream media, is what they'll do is they'll take the good man who was doing something good, who was protecting, and they'll turn him into the villain just so people don't stand up, so people do shy away. And at the end of the day, we are responsible for the society we live in. Sure, we have police. Sure, we have, you know, whatever institution you want to. We're the ones living in it. We're the ones that are out there day to day making, you know, the world go round, whether it's, you know, in the trades, being, you know, a teacher, being a nurse, you know, whatever you want to call it. Like, these are the things that keep the wheel spinning. And within that, we need to start not only suggesting but demanding that men be men again and start being good people, start protecting your family, start protecting the weak ones. That should be your job,
and you should be proud of it.
Exactly,
you should embrace it.
Absolutely, and you might not win every one, but you want to know what you did. Something you stood up for what you believed in, and that was the one thing that Americans all had in common back in the day with that greatest generation. They had that belief that America was something bigger. It was better for God and country. It was bigger than any of us. And that selflessness is what led to that generation being the biggest group of badasses that ever exist.
I think it still does exist on a larger scale than maybe we're aware of, or that,
I hope so.
That I do too. But I think we.
It's hard for me to think that, you know, these guys that lied about their age or snuck into a plane so they can go fight Nazis is on the same level as people that are like, yeah, there's a dude walking into the girls' bathroom. Better not say anything. Like, dude, man, we're not even close anymore. It exists, but we need that spark.
Yeah, and it's not near the scale, but it's, I guess what I'm saying is, you know, the game's not over.
No.
That could be brought back. And
sometimes you got to be an asshole.
Sometimes that's what's
I mean, really. It gets stuff done. It gets your point across. And just because you're honest or you approach a situation the way you feel that it needs to be approached, I mean, some situations need to be approached aggressively.
Right.
Some more passively. And it doesn't make you an asshole. I mean, we're living in a society where just being honest makes you an asshole. And we need to get rid of that. Because, again, it goes back to the First Amendment. Freedom to say what needs to be said in order to create the dialogue to work through a problem is to prevent it from escalating. And
I think some people are afraid to have that conversation, and they just resort back to their own little world on their phone.
And which is why I don't think that this generation holds a candle to the World War II generation, yeah. Because we're afraid to, you know, call a spade or, you know, call out the bullshit. While these dudes, like I said, were lying about stuff so they can go, you know, dodge bullets over on,
so they can go to war.
Exactly.
Earlier than the government said they were supposed to.
Yeah. So I just.
There's a historian, Victor Davis Hanson. Maybe you guys have heard some stuff by him. He's on social media, you know, quite a bit. And he's a classicist, so he studies the ancient civilizations. And he said that during, I think it was the Carthaginians attacked Rome sort of early in Rome's rise to their empire. And the Romans lost, and the great majority of its army was wiped out. And within a year or so, they had rebuilt the army, and they go and they sack, you know, they sack Carthage, right? They come back with a vengeance, right? And then, you know, hundreds of years later, it was a bunch of barbarians from Germany who just run rampant over the remains of the Roman Empire, right? And he put it this way. He said that the earlier Romans, the reason they were able to bounce back the way they did was because they understood what it meant to be Roman. And I think that the greatest generation understood what it meant to be American.
Yes.
And maybe that's part of the problem. Maybe, just possibly, that's part of the problem that we have, is that we've got it so good that we don't really understand what it means to be American. I'm not saying the people at this table.
The masses.
But there's maybe plenty of people that don't really have a good understanding of what it really means to be, how important it is, and how much we benefit from those people that have gone before us, and how we stand on the shoulders of giants in this society that they've built. Like, we didn't build it, they built it.
Can I ask your guys' thoughts on how much of that do you think is by chance, and how much of that do you think is by design? Because think about, I mean, we've got entire the school systems.
It's ironic you say that, because that's exactly where I was thinking about going. Now, you guys are about 8 or 9 years younger than I am, I think. Was there anything you recall, whether it's junior high or high school, where it was maybe impressed upon you to not be proud of something about the country?
I think we just missed that.
I mean, I can remember back to being in sixth grade. And I had a teacher, which was kind of like, called it social studies, right? So we got a little bit into that. And I didn't know it being a child, right? I'm in sixth grade. I don't know no better. I just want to go outside and.
Yeah, teacher's teaching.
You're right. It's you're just, you know, it's the Charlie Brown, right? All you hear is like the want, 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 want. And you're like, okay, I don't really care about this shit. And, you know, but. You do subconsciously learn, right? You take out what you want to learn. And I remember getting to like high school and seeing, like, you get to choose what you want to learn to an extent, right? Like, you get American history or world history, or, you know, you get these elective classes where, you know, and I was very geared toward like the American history. I've just always been that way. It's just something that I like. And I just remember that a lot of the things that were taught from her were very specific to what she wanted to teach and how she wanted you to perceive the world. And I'm not going to say her name, and I didn't really think about it till as I got older, and I constantly like go back like to where I'll hear something, and for whatever reason I'll go back to that class and I'll be like, well, that's not what I was told originally. Mm-hmm. You know, it's kind of like the whole, you know, dinosaurs are oil, right? Like, that's complete bullshit, right? But everyone today is like, yeah, thank the dinosaurs for giving us, you know, your Dodge Viper or whatever you got. You know, it's like, well, that's not how shit really is. So, I mean, from an early age, I didn't know it then, but I know it now. And now having, you know, kids varying in age, you know, I have that 10-year difference in my, you know, my oldest to my youngest. It kind of worries me because I, like, see what she's learning, and then I'm going to have younger kids coming into school, and I'm like, man, how much difference is there going to be to what you're actually told is what's correct? You know, what I tell you to what you're to what a high school student to what a grammar school student is learning is completely different. And I think that's going to be, there's no, I don't know how you say it, right? There's no standard to that. And it's all on perception. How do you want to teach it, and what facts do you want to put out there? And are those facts actual facts, or are they just opinion?
Well, I just read something the other day that if you homeschool your kid, there's 100% less of a chance that they're going to turn out to be a transvestite, American hating.
Yeah, but you know what? I mean, we know some people that have homeschooled kids.
We did.
And I'm not saying all kids. I'm not saying all kids, but some kids. They don't get that they don't get the razzing, man. They don't get the business at school. They don't have kids calling them fucking pussies, and you know, they don't get that scrap in the schoolyard, right? Where you got a problem with somebody, you know. Do you condone fighting with kids? No, but there's sometimes where you just gotta stand up for yourself and you gotta
That's social development.
Yeah, right? And there's a lot to be said about learning your place in line. Yeah. I will never forget the first time that I run my mouth. You know, I was a kid.
No.
But, yeah, of course.
No. And, no, but I can't, don't believe it.
I can't remember. It was one of the twins, Joe or John Stewart, if you're listening. I remember. Came out to center field, punched me right in the fucking nose.
Fuck that guy.
And, no, man, I earned it. He told me, too. But you want to know what? I thought about it before I ran my mouth again. It was a very humbling experience.
Yeah.
You know what? It's very similar. I mean, I hate to shoot off on a tangent, but... Like, even dating, even talking to females, some of what I thought the best pickup lines were didn't work out real well.
Yeah.
You know, but you learn that because you use it. You're like, that's still not working.
Do you sleep on your stomach?
I better switch it up.
But does this smell like chloroform?
But
I learned.
But
that,
now you don't even need, you again, it's on the phone.
Well, and that's the thing.
Like, I think these phones and this social media are such a there's obviously certain advantages for business, email access, communication, stuff like that. But, like, you don't even have to learn how to go talk to someone.
Interact in a social setting.
Because you can just swipe. If, not cute enough, not tall enough, and you just swipe. And
I'm guilty of this, too. Think about how convenient texting is versus phone calls. Like,
Oh yeah.
I mean, dude, if you call me, chances are, I'll answer my phone for you typically because we shoot the shit every now and again. But most of the time, if you're calling, fuck you button, I'll text them. Hey, man, got my hands full.
Right.
You know, it's again, we've been almost conditioned to take that approach because the social setting isn't what it used to be. I mean, we're always tied to that damn internet. And when you were can I go back on
100%. Yep.
When you were saying, when did it happen? Personally, like, I didn't really pay attention in school at all. Like, I was, you know, doing my own thing. But
I'll vouch for that. He did not pay attention
at all. I was the kid that pissed in the garbage can, you know? And
when you got to go.
Yeah.
Or ran down the hallway naked.
I did do that. And you're welcome, everybody. But after I got out of school, I started, learning about life and what it takes to be great. And, you know, it was 9/11, 2001, and we graduated in 2001, the spring. 9/11 happened, like, right afterwards. So that was that is when I really got involved. And then if you see the linear progression of these things, like, after 9/11, we had kids that, hey, you don't have to stand for the Pledge of Allegiance anymore.
Yeah.
All right, so you got kids that, now we're going to give every fucking kid a trophy. So you celebrate mediocrity.
Or losing.
Yeah, or losing. And what that does, and I think people, I'm going to think about how I'm going to say this without...
just do.
Mothers are great for nurturing, but when it comes to being a fucking winner, you want a man teaching your kid how to be a winner. Because there are winners and losers in life. In the world treats women with kids' gloves. The world will walk over you when you're laying dead on the sidewalk if you're a dude. It's just the way it is. And you cannot celebrate mediocrity. And what that ultimately does is it deprives kids of the fundamental experience of that surge of dopamine that they get when they do. You get your ass kicked at the big game. And then you and your team work for an entire year to come back and you face those same people. And everything that you did for that year comes down to that moment and you win. That gives kids a surge of dopamine and all these endorphins that it becomes a high. And physiologically, like, this actually happens. And by depriving them of that, by just giving anybody of a trophy, you are taking away the child's will to do better. Like, fundamentally, they will not experience that high that they get from working and from chasing that dream. And okay, everybody gets a trophy. It seems so innocent. It's not. It takes that away from them.
And there's levels to that, because not to, you know, counter your story, but second season rolls around after they got beat the first season.
Mm-hmm.
And they went out there and they trained and they practiced more and they get to that big game again. And maybe they lose again. And they can sit there and go, we didn't train hard enough.
Yes.
We trained. We thought we did good enough.
Turns out we didn't.
And there's another lesson there.
Yes. I mean,
it's not good enough.
Yeah.
You give it everything you've got.
And sometimes you just lose. Yeah, I mean,
sometimes they're better.
I've personally learned more.
That's a key learning too, is that there are people who are just better than you.
Yes. I've learned more from losing. It's okay to
not always be the best, right? Like, that's a life.
The Orioles beat us every damn year in Little League, like, every damn year.
Yeah.
And we,
I remembered,
worked hard and tried, and that team just had it. They just had it, and we didn't.
Well, it's interesting you say that.
I just fucked their sisters. I won the war.
Who's editing this?
Earlier, I forgot who was talking, but we were talking about like training with firearm. Like, you want to be as good as you can.
Yeah.
And we've talked about it numerous times. Everything is a trade-off. So if you want to be really, really, really good with the firearm, that means you're practicing a lot. You're training a lot. You're spending a lot. Something, you're giving up something else.
Right.
And it reminds me of a show, and I forgot what it was, but they were talking about, obviously it's a character, but James Bond, great driver. Every time he was in a car, great shooter. Never missed, whether he was going for a light switch or an electrical outlet or a person, or great shooter, great poker player, you know, phenomenal body, always got the women, you know. And there was a show, and he goes, it's impossible to be that good, to be at the top tier of that many categories. There's not enough time in life. They're just, you have to pick and choose, right? Like, even if you don't have kids and a wife, and if, like, there's only so much time, and deciding what kind of father to be, what kind of husband to be, and how much you're going to be there compared to how much you're going to be at work, or how much you're going to be training with firearms, or how much you're going to be at the bar. It's all a function of trade-offs. But ultimately what it comes down to is, no matter what you're doing with any of those, you have to be proud You have to, you know, make what you think is the right decision. You're never going to be right all the time. But look out for one another, because maybe there's something you're really good at that someone isn't, because they don't have the resources or the time, or they went and focused on something else. But in a community like we've been talking about, it's, you know, we all rise together. Again, yeah, high tide rate.
The essence of community.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, it's the utility of it.
But being proud of that community and being an example.
When you talk about community and, you know, pride and all that, 9/11 was awful. But I don't know if you guys remember what America was like there was the day after.
Flag on almost every house.
That was one of the most tragically beautiful moments that I've ever witnessed in my life. It didn't matter what color you were, what God you believed in, what we were all Americans.
Right.
Come September 12th.
How long do you think that lasted?
Well, I would say it was a couple years, because we had a lot of that wishy-washy. We didn't know what was going to happen, and then we went into that, you know, war on terror. Iraqi
freedom or whatever it was. It was long enough for them to get the, what's it called, the Patriot Act pushed through.
Right? Yeah. Wasn't it like...
Where everybody was like, nah, man, we need to open up everything.
Well, under the guise, again, of safety.
Yeah.
If a politician could use safety and or kids' safety as a selling point, how do you refute that?
Which goes back to how much of this is by chance and how much is by design.
I mean, I don't mean to kind of stray away from that, but just, you know, as much as we were all Americans, I mean, do you remember that? I mean, there was a point in time where, like, everyone was nervous around, you know, like, that whole Muslim thing, right? Everyone thought, like, if you had, like, dark skin and you look Indian, like, you were kind of like an enemy after 9/11, right? But going back to what you were saying, like, you know, we're...
Do you think many people really... Did you... If it's too personal, like, take a pass, but, I mean, did you think that?
I mean, I
don't know anybody that really thought that.
All I'm saying is I've never sat next to a nun and thought she was going to explode.
You know,
I'm kidding.
You heard about it. You know, we were in high school, right? Like, I was, you know, that was like our senior year in high school. And like, I remember people, like, I don't know. I remember that, like, where people were just like.
Well, let me jump in there, Joe.
Like, don't trust the.
There was
a foreign.
Right, like it was like no, they were on high alert. Remember, then we started having terror alerts.
If you see something, say something.
The hate was manufactured too.
So there'd be a group of engineers, and maybe the engineers were Indian or Muslim,
right?
And they're surveying a bridge.
I know. I think I remember they get the police. Sikhs wear turbans,
right?
Yep.
And they're not Muslim, but you know they get lumped in and had some problems. Yeah.
And I'm not saying like I wasn't saying. Like Muslims, like directly, but it was like, you know, if you were brown, whatever your image in your head of what a terrorist looked like, that was what everyone was nervous about.
So part of me believes that was manufactured as well, because I mean, throughout history, the enemy has always had a face.
Yeah, I mean,
whether it's the Nazi,
you want to attach a face to the enemy,
and that was definitely one of the physicians I used to work with. I sit down and I have breakfast with him probably like once a month, and he is from Palestine. His family is in the Gaza Strip right now, and his brother, who is a surgeon, actually just died in one of the bomb droppings.
Oh boy,
yeah. So we discuss a lot of this stuff all the time, and part of the discussion or part of what we always end up on is how we both believe that the forces that be want the white guy to hate him because he's brown and the brown guy to hate white people because they think that every white guy hates them or that they're, I mean, we're
to,
made.
For what purpose? As a distraction?
No, just fear. Because then we're on board. I mean, if you fear somebody, you're going to be okay with them going and demolishing whatever country they come from or what. Or I shouldn't say you're going to be okay with it. You're not going to be as vehemently opposed to it, though, because you know what? That's the bad guy. Those look like bad people. The terrorism alarm has, you know, been that bell's been rung since 9/11, and something that we fail to talk about openly is that, you know, Osama bin Laden in the, what the hell's the name of his group?
Al-Qaeda.
Al-Qaeda, they were created by the CIA, the same way that Hamas was created by the IDF. Like, these groups were all created, trained, and then let loose, and you think it's just by by sheer chance that they come back and they bomb us or that they create these terrorist attacks? I'm sorry. There's, again, I'm going to take my tinfoil hat off. But really, I do think that there is propaganda to get us to fear fellow man. Because as long as we're hating and fearing each other, we're not uniting and talking about the real assholes that are our politicians. And, you know, this...
Do you think that's why they don't like Trump?
Absolutely. He's an outsider. I didn't even need to listen to a word come out of his mouth. The second I saw people from the left and the right unanimously hate that man, I knew he was a candidate for me.
Right.
Because, you know...
Yeah, everyone hates him. I like the guy.
Yeah.
Right?
Absolutely. Yeah. Because I can tell you what, like, I mean, the right or the left, they haven't done a fucking thing for any of us. They make it seem like they're fighting for us, especially the people on the right. The left typically will get stuff done because I believe that the goals of the real powers that be align on the left. But it's all, I mean, what is one thing that the Republican Party has done that is good for your average American or that they're saying that they're fighting against? Have they actually done anything? I can't think of anything. They push back or claim that they push back or they open investigations, but when's the last time that they've actually, the 9/11 report?
It does seem as though they've, I've heard this, you know, talked about that they've enjoyed status of being the party of opposition, you know, that they sort of have, you know, adopted the idea, well, if you want to save your gun rights, vote for us.
Yeah. But what do they actually do?
We'll keep them from taking all of your gun rights. They might get some, but yeah. Hey, vote for us so we can stand up against this. So they've sort of adopted this this concept that they should be this party that is always on the defensive. But you know, and it is a strategy, right? Because that'll get you votes.
Well, I agree with you, and I will say.
But we've had a lot of gains, too. We talked about that just before we started recording, right?
Yeah.
Specifically going back to Second Amendment stuff we've had.
From a federal standpoint, over the past 20 years or so, there's been some rulings from, you know, U.S. Supreme Court, whether it's Heller or Gruen, that have helped, you know, bring back... Or I shouldn't say bring back because those rights are always there, but have...
And depending upon your
have abortion, pulled back... That. Some of the government's infringements on a federal level, but in Illinois, especially over the past couple of years, we've gone backwards.
Can I ask you guys, like, if you, I'm going to use this as an example. Like you said, you know, go back 20 years, 30 years, whatever it would be. So let's just say laws were passed in that time period where we took 10 steps back for gun rights. Let's just use that as the analogy. Fast forward and we get some stuff that goes in our favor, and we take 4 steps forward. Is that really something to be celebrated? I mean, we're still behind the button. I get what you guys are saying. I'm genuinely asking.
I think, yes, it's to be celebrated with caution. It's to be celebrated and maybe used as a rallying cry to keep going, to build motivation. I'm surprised at this point, to be honest with you. I believe there's now 29 states in the country that are constitutional carry. I did not, I mean, I'm dating myself a little bit now, but 15 years ago, I never would have thought that there'd be 29 states that say just because you're alive and you haven't proven you don't deserve it, that you are allowed to carry a firearm. 29 states. That's progress.
Agreed.
Yeah, and I never thought we'd have concealed carry in Illinois.
I did not think we'd do that. One of our podcast guests, Rhonda Azell, maybe 5 episodes ago? You know, she was a big reason that some of that hit the courts.
And she pushed for some like gun ranges and stuff like that, and the accessibility for people. Yeah,
and she's still fighting. Yeah. She's still That's fighting awesome. To get a gun range built within the city limits of Chicago.
Yeah.
Where Lee and I have talked it a little bit on the air, quite a bit off the air. I don't know what that last hurdle is, but it's a big one because strictly from a business and financial standpoint, it'd be a moneymaker. And could you imagine being able to open a gun range off Archer and Central Avenue?
Yeah.
It would be busy all the time. It could be open 24 hours a day. It'd be busy.
And the other thing is a lot of people who live in the inner city, right, don't even drive vehicles. So they might not have as much access to suburbs where there's an easy accessibility point for them to go to a range.
Yes. That was one of her issues, that she had to drive such a distance just to be able to go practice.
And unfortunately, most of the people that live in the inner city are probably the people that need that training and education and capability to defend themselves the most, right? I mean, the majority of the crime, probably per capita, right? Because there's more people, so that's obviously just there. But
force of numbers.
But if we look at, you know, this, I mean, just over like the last couple of weekends in Chicago, I mean, the numbers are...
They're staggering.
They're, yeah, I mean... And it, all the gun laws that we have for restrictions, right? Nothing has addressed that situation to where people are still being killed in great numbers.
I would have to believe, Mike, correct me if I'm wrong, they don't want it fixed.
No, they don't. I really believe with all of my being that the more shit that is going on down here, ground level, let's just say, like, you know, we're fighting about, you know... pronouns or violence in the city, guns, this, that. The more we fight about that, the less time we spend actually talking about how we solve the real issue and getting these assholes to actually start working for us in D.C. I think people
that forget. That is interesting.
These people work for us. Something I was actually looking the other day. Citizens arrest.
Let me go back to that.
For real.
Let me go back to that for a second, Mike, because I think it's a really well-known concept, but maybe I'm a little naive. I wonder if most people realize that our government, local and beyond, those are our employees. They literally work for us.
State and federal. Right.
And you can say, and you can go there, and no one can stand in your way. You can say anything to these people when they give you the podium and they give you your 2 minutes or whatnot. You, as an American citizen, have the right to approach your government.
That is guaranteed.
Yes.
And there was a lot of push. There was a lot of pushback to some of those school boards.
Well, I want people to know that those things by law have to be recorded in you could call them a fat bitch. You can call them whatever you want. You can tell them that, you know, I mean, seriously, you can go say whatever you want. You could, you know, say pussy for 3 minutes straight at the top of your lungs. They need, by law, they need to let you do that. There are no laws that keep you from doing that. And should they bring a cop in or something like that to take you off, you get that cop's name and you ask for the recording. All public meetings and all that are recorded by law, and you sue them. You get a civil rights lawyer, and you sue them, and you will win 100 out of 100 times. Hit them where it hurts, in the wallet.
Well, and that's the scary part, where a couple years ago they wanted to be able to declare some of those outspoken parents as domestic terrorists.
Well, yeah, and I mean, because the one guy was out there in an uproar because a transvestite raped his daughter. That was in Virginia. They beat that dude unconscious. Did you see that? Yeah, that was what kicked this whole thing off. It was in Virginia, and the school board buried it, and they wouldn't let it be discussed. And he went to the board meeting and started talking about this. And it turned out that the kid that was transvestite, I don't know what it is, was moved from a previous school for a similar incident. And he ended up raping this girl in the bathroom. And the father was shut down by the media, shut down by the police, finally went into the school board and brought it up. And there's video, and I highly recommend looking at this. They tackle this dude, and I mean, like, boots on his neck, cuff this guy and drag him out of there because he wanted the world to know that his daughter was raped. Like, come on now. I don't want to live. That is not the America that I grew up in. And I'm sorry if there ever was a time to, like, honestly, like, you want to talk about a tyrannical government, and that one checks all the boxes in my book.
Right.
Like, you got to go. You got to go. That's.
Do you feel as though the past 12 to 18 months there's starting to be a shift? I almost feel like the pendulum's starting to swing the other way. People have had enough of the men in the bathrooms, of men in the locker rooms, of you know,
telling women that they can do anything that a guy can do, and that, you know, there's no difference in the sexes. And
I want to say there was a fellow, I read an article a couple months ago, a fellow declared that he was a trans in court, and he was convicted, and he went to a women's jail.
Didn't he get one of them pregnant?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
did he do that on purpose?
Oh, dude.
You know what, Joe? I'll tell you what.
I mean, here's the thing. The guy's like, you know, Tinder's not working out for me. I figure I'd do a petty crime. I go in there. I'll just flip-flop it real quick. I mean, you know.
Or
I'm the only dude in there, right?
I got the government to pay for my date.
Maybe not that much forethought, yeah, but you sit there and go, look, I'm probably going to jail anyway.
Yeah.
It's this one or it's that one.
Yeah.
But how?
Which
well played, sir. Or ma'am.
Yeah. What are we doing? Yeah. But I mean, seriously, like this is—we're laughing about this.
Yeah, no, I mean,
but
I do think it's starting to come back. People have there's a lot of people that have had enough of it.
They do, but I think that. So I was just talking. Me and Joe were talking about this. Behind closed doors, people have had enough. When it comes to being outspoken about it, that is where we fall short. And again, you can believe what you want to believe. I believe beyond the shadow of a doubt that the 2020 election was stolen. I do not for a second. I'm sorry. This is just too much.
I don't think it was a fair election.
No, absolutely. I mean, well, it's quite common for polls to, you know, close down for a couple of hours and, you know, for, you know, hundreds of thousands. But that's neither here nor there. The only reason they were able to do that is because people that supported Trump were shamed for supporting him, and people were not vocal, and people that didn't want to ruffle feathers or wouldn't say who they were supporting or wouldn't call the bullshit out and, you know, say, hey, you know, it's pretty fucking obvious that something is going on here. You don't have to say that it was stolen, but this shit ain't right. And that's what they're doing now, is they're creating the illusion. Again, it doesn't matter what actually is. It's the perception. In 2 weeks ago, everybody hated Kamala. The day after Biden said that he's dropping out, you would have thought that this was the most popular bitch that has ever, I mean, since Princess Di.
Right.
Everybody loves her. What? Like, just like that, people forget. That's terrifying. And the illusion is what allows this to happen.
There's a lot of people out of our society, and I'm not, definitely not making excuses by
any means. No.
But there's a lot of people that just don't pay attention. They literally, they'll come out and say, I avoid politics. I don't want nothing to do with it. And
you should call them a pussy.
And they have as much of a right to go vote and pick that any one of us do, as they should, but it's an uneducated vote. And that's to me, that's a real big part of the problem, is the uneducated vote.
And which is why I'm big on men kind of taking charge here, because it is your duty as an American to be educated and to know and to vote. I mean, it is your duty. We were given, it is a sacred right to be able to diplomatically choose those who lead you.
That's pretty great.
It is, unless you've got a bunch of, you know, shit bags in society like, oh, I'm not I don't pay attention to politics. I don't want to get involved. Really? I mean, that's unacceptable to me. Like, I mean, that should.
I agree with you. It's unacceptable. But I also think that if you're not going to educate yourself, then don't vote.
But they do.
Yeah, you know. I don't mean to interrupt you. Can I ask you a question? Do you talk a lot about politics in school with students? I mean, I'm just curious to know.
It's a social studies class. Okay. And so, you know, for sure things come up. And so, yes.
How hard is it to stay neutral politics in that? Or do you?
I try to keep my, there's a difference, I believe that there's a difference between my personal views and the views of historians and or especially the people that founded our country or great, what are widely considered great presidents, like Abraham Lincoln or what have you, right? And so, you know, I do try to inform my students of what those people thought. And I, you know, and then if I'm asked for, you know, my personal opinion, it depends on what it is. Like sometimes I'll give it. It depends upon my relationship with the student. You know, sometimes those conversations are ones that you have, like, you know, outside the classroom.
For sure.
And then there's some places where I just, you know, where I just won't go. I've been asked about my religious beliefs and things like that. And sometimes I'll say, you know, like, well, I don't want to influence you one way or the other. Those are tough. Those are tough. And I will say that, you know, as I, wow, it's like so many things in my life that, you know, once you feel like you start to understand it and you think that you've got it, you realize there's so much more to learn. You know, that being said, you know, I do believe that it's important that that we guide, that we help to guide young people, and that we do try to do the, you know, as much as possible the right thing. Go ahead.
Reason I ask that is because I came primarily from a union family, right?
Yeah.
So primarily in the Chicagoland area where we reside, it's typically Democrat voting, right?
Yeah.
So I've been affiliated with two different unions at this point. And they always say, vote your pocketbook, right? Or vote your checkbook, right? Vote your checkbook. So they were always pushing for these Democratic candidates.
Yeah, and there's something to be said, I think, about if you would define that as selfishness. I think there is something to be said about it. Selfishness is not always bad. I talk about it in personal protection. Mm-hmm. You know, there are times when you need to think about who you are and what your responsibilities are and who primarily you're responsible for. I wouldn't make a blanket statement that unions are wrong when they appeal to people to consider their selfish natures or their self-centered natures.
Right.
But what I kind of
was going for was, like, then I slowly realized, like, in the last couple of elections, a couple of the different unions did endorse Donald Trump. And, you know, I never, you know, I did always vote my pocketbook, right? Because that's, I thought I was going to be a strong union member, and that's what I was going to do. And the more I realize it now, with the way things have inflated and the cost of living and everything went up, I kind of thought to myself, like, I could vote my pocketbook and make X amount of money, but am I really getting that back on the other end, right? Like, I'm gonna be able to work, right? But I feel like I'm working twice as hard now to make the same amount of money as I did before. So I started paying a little bit more attention to politics, and kind of how Joe was saying, you know, I try and force my children now to pay more attention to the politics, to be like, listen, just because everyone says someone's a bad person, look at what they're really for. Like, what do they believe in, and what do you believe in? Like, what do you think is good?
The first 72 years of Donald Trump's life, he was never a racist.
No. I mean,
he suddenly became one.
Yeah, well,
as a presidential
candidate. And that goes back to the media, right? Everyone could twist because, again, you know, they were portraying him to be that asshole, right? We said that the Republicans didn't like him and the Democrats didn't like him.
All I'm saying is the dude has had more money than he could spend in a lifetime, his entire life.
And
he's...
Yeah. And we do know that some politicians, prior to him becoming a politician, were friends with him, right? They wanted his money.
Yeah.
When he wasn't in the politic game, they loved him. And as soon as he said, you know what, I'm going to get into politics, they're like, that guy has a chance of beating me. He's my opponent now. He's a terrible person, you know?
I don't think it's just a political opponent. He is honestly a threat to the entire system or establishment, is like I would call it, because he said it. Like, I was a part of the inside, or I was a part of this crowd. I know what goes on in there. I'm coming out, and I'm on your side now because I want to fix it. Like, that ain't right.
Yeah, I didn't know really where I was going with that, but it's, you know, you said that you really need to pay attention when you vote, and I was a blind voter for a long time. Now the older I get, I realize the importance of it, right? Like, I guess maybe when I was, I'll say it, younger, I was very naive, but now I realize, I'm realizing that
most people are when they're younger, right?
But, but I was naive for way too long, right? Now I'm starting to learn a lot more, and maybe everybody feels that way.
I've always been brilliant.
Yeah, well, you're
and modest.
You're a special kind
and
of
and apparently naked in the hallway.
Yeah,
an a savant over here.
No, that's again, but that's part of growing. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
and having conversations over time and other people sparking thoughts
and experiencing it firsthand. You know what I mean? Like, yeah, you vote a certain way, and now you got to watch what happens when you vote that way. And
I'd like to go back to what Joe said, and I completely disagree with voting by your pocketbook. And I say that because, well, here, before I say what my opinion is on it, Joe, what do you think right now, if you're going to an election booth, a polling, what is the most important issue this country faces that is a factor in who you're voting for? If you had to pick, and I'll bring it to each of you, so if Joe's still thinking and you guys want to chime in.
Border.
That's a really good question, Joe.
So the border?
That's 100%. Yeah, okay. A country without borders is not a nation.
Okay, Lee or Joe?
Like that. Man, you're throwing me off guard, but I would say we worry, I feel as an American, we worry too much about other people and what they're doing to help them out without being beneficial to us first. Like, we need to take care of the homeland.
When you say other people, you mean like giving money to other countries?
We spend so much money trying to help other people and give aid, and we have so many of the same problems that just go overlooked, right? Like we have like, you know, opioid epidemics and all sorts of stuff
homelessness,
you know, we have all these things that are happening in our country, and we're worried about like what everyone else is doing.
I don't think they want to fix some of that. There's way too much money to be made.
They don't, but if somebody told me that, and see, that's the thing, somebody's going to tell you they're going to do something, which we see a lot in politics, right? Everyone says they're going to do something. We're going to cut a budget. We're going to cut this budget. We're not going to spend so much money. They get in there, and what do? They spend fucking 10% more than the last asshole who was in there did, and they don't fix any of the problems. So, you know, at this point in time, like, if you ask me, like, I would say let's make us as great as
America first, then, is what you're saying.
America first, yeah, but where do you start on that?